across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, July 11th, 7-11 day. It's also National Cow Appreciation Day, as you heard from Christina earlier. It's also National Mojito Day. If there was a mojito song, I missed it. We missed the Pina Colada song yesterday, but now we've got a challenge over the next 55 minutes to find a mojito song. Coming up later this hour, we're going to be talking to Hans Breitenmoser. He's a Lincoln County dairy farmer, and despite some places getting some rain and thunderstorms yesterday, Wisconsin is still well short of the precipitation it needs for a good growing season. We will also learn more about Camp Kenwood, and Grace Clardy will be here from Wisconsin Farmers Union to tell us more about that. That's all coming up at 7:30. If you missed our last hour, where we had the uplift with Christina Lorre, where we also talked about the effects of Governor Evers' vetoes to create a new budget surplus, you can catch that show as a podcast. Just go to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, and subscribe to our show as a podcast or listen back to episodes there or subscribe through Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places. And again, here, if you're listening live, our studio number is 844-967-2789. Happy to bring to the program now Lee Roche, a longtime head of the Western Wisconsin Technical College. For some 28 years, he was there. And now, amongst other things, is helping with a group called Keep Our Republic, something that was formed in the wake of the 2020 elections. Lee Roche, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
First off, I have to say we played the time warp game because I haven't talked to you in a very long time, going back to 1996 when you ran for Congress, never knowing back then that someday I would run for Congress in 2012. And now here we are all these years later talking about a different subject entirely. My wife and I always joke, there is no five-year plan. You never know.
Well, that's true. After I retired from Western, I was committed not to jump into something right away, but I started having conversations with people that I knew and respected. And a lot of concerns came back to the issues of the growing political divide and the concerns about the integrity of the American democracy. And that kind of led to the work I'm involved with right now.
And that's led to this group called Keep Our Republic. And we talked to former Congressman Richard Gephardt back in March. He was on a bit of a speaking tour through La Crosse, through Green Bay. I think there were one or two other stops, mm-hmm. talking a bit about the bipartisan nature of a group that is dedicated to, as the mission statement says, protecting a republic of laws and strengthening the checks and balances of our democratic, small d, electoral system. In terms of plain English, Lee, it really is just about helping the public understand what our election system is really like right now and whether these attacks on it are warranted. Is that kind of a good summary of it?
I'd say it is a very good summary. In fact, our democracy or our democratic republic is really based on a very important principle that we allow our elections by the people to determine who our leaders will be in government. And the cornerstone of that is our belief in the integrity of that process. And in Wisconsin, we actually have, it's been thoroughly reviewed and audited. We have a very, very robust and healthy electoral system. And so it's important for us to promote that and help people prepare for upcoming elections so that we maintain the integrity and our belief in the integrity of the American Democratic Republic.
And although, again, I'm talking to you, you had run for Congress once as a Democrat. I talked to Richard Gephardt, the Democratic leader in Congress. This is very much a bipartisan effort. And one of your cohorts at the Wisconsin level leading this group is Kathy Bernier, a Republican who served in the state Senate seat that I served in the legislature. And she is one of several Republicans who also believes very strongly in this mission.
It's true. And our group has representatives from different political views But there's a common belief. There's a significant concern that the growing political divide is breaking down trust in basic institutions and the important cornerstones of our democracy. And so it's that common belief that's pulling people together to try to take this effort on and ensure that the 2024 election is a positive and healthy experience.
Along with Kathy Bernier, other members of the Wisconsin Advisory Council include Mike Hipsch, former Republican Assembly Speaker, Bill McCoshin, Republican. Democrats that include former Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton, Joseph Czarnecki, David Bowen. There's Kevin Riley, Reed Ribble, former Republican Congressman, Dana Walks, Democratic former state legislator, former Republican Governor Tommy Thompson. So there's clearly some bipartisan firepower there that is underscoring the importance that people put in this mission. And we're going to talk more about that on the other side of this break with Lee Rosch. We're going to get the latest weatherology forecast. And then hopefully having established the mission and the bipartisanship of the group Keep Our Republic, we can get into how that message goes out to voters and potential voters, because there is so much that is negative in our politics. But what shouldn't be one of those negative things is faith in the integrity of the elections. We have a great system here, and we're going to talk more about that with Lee Rosch on the other side of this break here up north.
I'd driven all night and I was kind of thirsty. So I started at the Hawk's Breath, took myself a deep breath.
All right, well, that's what I get for doubting Aaron. Sure enough, those fingertips got to work, and he found a mojito song for National Mojito Day on this July 11th. All right, Jennifer Wojcicki is here from Weatherology, going to tell us all about what we're looking for in a forecast of a you can definitely tell there's some kind of a front just based on current temperatures, not to mention the thunderstorms and, you know, that high heat and humidity might be going on a bit of a vacation here. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you're exactly right. And it looks like sunny skies across the board today in the mid-80s from Madison to Richland Center. That's to the southwestern portions of the state. That's going to be the warmest. Otherwise, 70s for the rest of the state. As you mentioned, that cold front pushes through. A little below average for those areas is nearly the entire state should be in the 80s this time of the year. At least a slight chance for showers and storms coming in the overnight hours for all, with a better chance for that during the day on Wednesday. A marginal risk for severe weather tomorrow for Madison over to Milwaukee. So definitely some we'll keep you posted on here for tomorrow. Otherwise, highs will be a little bit cooler overall, mainly in the 70s or around 80 as that cold front fully pushes through. Thursday, at least a slight chance for showers and storms. Once again, warmer though, with highs in the 80s for most, upper 70s from Wausau over to Oshkosh and to the lakefront. Friday, chance for showers and storms again for everyone, 80s across the board. Then just a slight chance for showers or storms to start off the weekend on Saturday with similar temperatures in the 80s.
All right, Jennifer, 55 degrees up here on Lake Wissota. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. All right, we are talking with Lee Rosch from Keep Our Republic, a group dedicated toward protecting democracy from unwarranted attack, but also dealing with situations that may come up and help assure people that election integrity can be protected in the state. But I have to start with an apology and an oversight. As I was talking to Lee during the commercial here, I'd been scrolling through the Wisconsin Advisory Council. I knew that Kathy Bernier was on there, Tommy Thompson, all these other folks. I was not expecting to see Dana Walks. That's new to me, friend of mine, former Democratic legislator. I scrolled down a little bit more and realized this is all alphabetical. Dave Zien is on the council as well, former state legislator, the person that I unseated in 2006. It's fair to say, Lee, that Dave Zien, Kathy Bernier, you put them on one side of the spectrum, and Dana Walks and me on the other side, and there are so many things where we can disagreed on, but there's such a reassurance that there are some fundamental foundations of democracy where we can all still find that common ground. And Lee, as somebody who, headed up Western Wisconsin Technical College for years, whatever your political leanings, you too had to get that sense of, accomplishment of working together with people, whether there was a D next to their name, an R or an I.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, it is a good group, and it's vitally important that we have people representing varying political beliefs that are talking about these issues, because frankly, our citizen is we're not in one or two buckets. We have views all across the board. And if we're promoting election integrity, we need to appeal to all of them. And it won't work if you're trying to segment and pick one side or the other and try to get into a finger pointing game.
There was recently in front of the U.S. Supreme Court something called the independent state legislature theory or doctrine. And the Supreme Court, by a 6-3 vote, turned that down. It's still, in my mind, somewhat troubling that there were three justices willing to go along with it. But independent state legislature theory is one of the things noted on the website about the kinds of things that concern Keep Our Republic. Can you explain why that is? It sounds like some kind of a removal of checks and balances.
That was a very big concern for our group as we were watching it unfold. With every election, the political parties try to posture to try to take advantage of whatever the dynamics are. But there has to be some uniformly agreed ground rules and checks and balances in the process. There just has to be. And if there was something that was trying to remove that in the electoral process, that really would hit at the core of our system. And so I was delighted that the outcome went as it would.
The ability of a legislature to say we are fully independent and the courts have no control over us when it comes to elections was just a complete perversion, I think, of what the founding fathers meant. Now, we've set aside one thing that could be a manufactured crisis, but Keep Our Republic deals as well with what could be very real crises threatening elections. Something we learned during the pandemic is that you have to be willing to work together to help protect democracy, even in a time of emergency. What are some of those things that Keep Our Republic is talking about?
Well, what we're trying to do is we're not trying to speculate on what incident might occur, but rather we're going to talk about readiness. What if there was an incident or a weather-related situation that caused us to close the polls in parts of the state? Who makes the decision? And what is the process that's followed to ensure that the election is ultimately carried out with integrity? And we want to talk those things through. You know, what we found in some cases in the past, in other states, there were gaps in that process. And we want to talk about those things ahead of time and get legal opinions on that process ahead of time so that we're as ready as we could possibly be.
Yeah, it's about doing some of the research, doing some of the homework. The group describes itself as mobilizing a citizens' firewall to protect against the abuse of presidential or gubernatorial emergency powers and other risks to the process. Or as Congressman Gephardt put it to us, it really is based in conversations, because right now, so much political messaging is either coming through talk shows like this or 30-second political ads. And in many ways, it sounds like what our democracy really needs to build that citizens' firewall are just more conversations about what we have right now and why it's worth protecting.
Yes, that's so true. You know, one of the things we are going to be doing is going around to the various communities all around the state. And that's really essential. In fact, the data indicate that many citizens have doubts about national news or other outside sources, but they do have trust in local news, local media, local government, local leaders. And so we want to have the conversation in different communities about this. It's the best way to try to get a better understanding of our process, the things that we do, any concerns that are out there. It's just the best way to try to reach people.
Well, because as well, that what that conversation does is goes after the flag draping that pretty much any group or any campaign can do. Every one of them can say, well, we're the ones who are actually defending America. Well, you have to have information on your side. You have to have facts on your side. And it's one thing to see this rise of extremist groups. They're even threatening political violence in the name of protecting election integrity. And Lee, I can't imagine the group thinks that that is a threat that's going to diminish in 2024, is looking out for and educating people about extremist groups, you know, what who they are, what their tactics are, and then what the reality is.
You know, you're bringing up one of the key issues that we have, and that there really are people that are trying to interfere with our elections, and we have to recognize that and help people to feel that, despite whatever your beliefs are and who you want to vote for, we can't afford to let people come in and try to interfere with the integrity of the process intentionally. And so disinformation and misinformation is a huge variable in this whole process.
We are talking to Lee Rosch of Keep Our Republic, a bipartisan group that is dedicated toward defending democracy and letting people know what the system is like now, what are the potential threats to the system, what is the misinformation that goes on that gets spread sometimes about, you know, our elections in Wisconsin and elsewhere. Lee, will this get to the point you've talked about, you know, having forums or public meetings? What does that look like? What is the group doing to get ready for that? What are you doing for the next, you know, six to 12 months or so?
Well, our planning session is scheduled for the in the next few weeks, and it's really going to lay out the game plan for the rest of the year and year and a half. We know that Wisconsin is a state of regions, and so our game plan will involve community dialogue sessions, but recognizing that there are regions where we buy our goods, where we get our news, and so on. And so we want to try to make sure that we cover those as well. We want to reach out to media, because part of the readiness effort is to help be able to build a network where we can communicate quickly and accurately. So those are the things that we're going to be laying out for the remaining period until November 20th.
As I looked at the, you know, Wisconsin Advisory Council, the National Advisory Council as well, you know, includes, you know, Republicans like Tom Ridge, the former governor of Pennsylvania. It includes, you know, Democrat Mary Landrieu, Gary Hart. But in all of these cases, these are folks that, you know, are no longer elected officials. My question to you is, would you want elected officials from both parties to support and be vocal about the efforts? Or is the effort more like, okay, you electeds stay back. We who are no longer on the ballot, Democrats, Republicans alike, you know, we want to be essentially left alone to carry on this messaging?
Well, as I understand it, the design of Keep Our Republic was to try to reach out to people who weren't in office at this time, because we didn't want to have questions about motive. We didn't want the group to have questions that there's a group that this group is trying to posture one way or the other. So having people who are knowledgeable, respected leaders, but don't have a direct stake in the game was important. However, we know that when we're talking about readiness, we need to get an understanding and a level of support from existing elected officials, because frankly, the decisions that are going to be made regarding the election are going to come from the current elected officials. So it's a big part of the process, but they weren't brought in as part of these advisory groups.
I guess then it begs the question, when you talk about, you know, current elected officials and current election officials, will a lot of the work of Keep Our Republic be at essentially a conceptual level? Or will you get into the weeds on particulars? And again, I don't mean to put you in a tough spot, but we have an administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission who's, you know, facing some real, it's a real troubling situation of legislators wanting to fire her because of the way she handled perceived irregularities that, you know, were frankly not there. But would a group like Keep Our Republic, you know, speak on behalf of election officials, or simply stick with the concept of here's what a fair election is consisting of?
Well, I don't want to speculate on where we would go, since we haven't had our planning meeting yet. But I would say that, you know, our focus is going to be on the legalities and the processes. And so we'll get into the weeds there.
Okay.
Whether or not it's in the political activity, that's something I'm not saying we wouldn't do, but it's less likely.
I think that was almost more for the benefit of the listeners to say that, you know, we're aware of it. We're going to watch that situation, but Keep Our Republic is definitely an important part of that process. Lee Rosch, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it greatly. Good luck with all the work you're doing.
Yeah, thank you, Pat.
All right. Hans Brighton Moser joins us next, along with Grace Clardy. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I know to you, it might sound strange, but I wish it would rain.
We're going to talk just a bit about potential drought conditions and also about Camp Kenwood with the Wisconsin Farmers Union coming up in just a second. First, one more follow-up from my interview with Lee Rosch, and I neglected to mention right off the top that if you'd like to learn more about what Lee Rosch has to say about Keep Our Republic, he has an outstanding op-ed in the La Crosse Tribune. It was in the Tribune, July 1st, so it was dated for that Saturday. And if you are able to, if you're a subscriber to the La Crosse Tribune or somebody can share it with you, you might even find it at the Keep Our Republic website at some point here. But Lee really does an outstanding job of laying out the issues and the stakes, and it's a completely worth your time to check out keepourrepublic.com. All right, let's turn now toward things that are both fun and serious in the world of Wisconsin agriculture. And to that end, we have our friend Hans Brighton Moser, Lincoln County Dairy Farmers here, and Grace Clardy, who is the Education Director for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Hans, you with us there this morning?
I am. Good morning.
All right. I understand you did get some rain up there in Lincoln County last night.
Yes, it finally poured. It came down like it was a real thing. I thought it was going to miss us. I live up on a hill, so I can see where rain is falling all around me, and sometimes it misses us. It has missed us quite a bit lately, but last night we finally got real live rain. I don't know how much we got yet, but we got a lot.
No, that's okay. It's fair to say, Hans, that one good day of rain is not going to do it when you've got something like 93% of Wisconsin facing some level of drought conditions.
Yes, I think that's fair to say. I guess we'll take whatever we can get. And if we get some here and then, some gets spread out here and there, it all helps. I think this rain that we got will give the corn a nice shot in the arm and the beans. Our second crop hay was pretty much non-existent, but this will help that out quite a bit. So,
good. Okay. I was just noting here, all the hay condition is at 41% good to excellent. That's down slightly from a week ago. The corn condition is 45% good to excellent. That's up 1% from last week. But as far as topsoil moisture, again, 29%, very short, 42% short. So there's still some catching up to be done, but sure. Hopefully we still got time to do that. So having been caught up now on drought conditions, when we were talking about what our topic would be this week, you being as active as you are in the Wisconsin Farmers Union, thought we should maybe turn our attention to some summer fun now that we're into July. So how do you describe, before we go to somebody who actually, works at and knows a thing or two about Camp Kenwood, but what does the typical layperson or Farmers Union member know about Camp Kenwood?
Oh, well, I don't know. This is our mission here, to tell people about Camp Kenwood. Camp Kenwood is actually the reason why I joined Wisconsin Farmers Union.
Well, see, there you go.
And so I learned something. So Camp Kenwood, our children have been going to Camp Kenwood. In fact, I've got one going on Sunday, and she's super excited to go again and reconnect with the good folks at Camp Kenwood. They always learn something. They learn a lot about cooperatives, and just the camp setting is always a good place for kids to go. And I think we need rain to grow good crops, and we need good educators and good environments to grow the next generation of civic minded adults. And that's where Grace comes in.
Absolutely.
How's that for a segue, Pat?
Yeah, Grace, that's great. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we can't put the ball on the tee better than that for you, Grace. So tell us a bit more about what Camp Kenwood does these days, and then we're going to talk a little history.
Perfect. So Camp Kenwood is it's in a more remote area off of Lake Wissota, between the trees, great scenery. I once had a camper describe it as the camp from the Parent Trap, which I think is just a perfect visualization that you need. And something that's a little bit more unique to us is we do have a very large educational component to it. However, we do still make it fun. So this year we're focusing on the diversity of Wisconsin agriculture. Our summer staff is actually the ones that write our lesson plans. So they focus on the things that are interesting to them. So for instance, one of our lesson plans is on sheep farming because three of our staff members were growing up on a sheep farm. So it's really interesting to see the things that they find fascinating that they want to bring in. We learn a lot about cooperatives because we are a co-op, and a lot of people don't really know about that. So being able to teach young kids about it is kind of life-changing for them. I've heard from plenty of campers that this is something that they want to take with them in the future and learning this. We also have a farmers union class where we're teaching campers about what is Farmers Union? Why is this important? They own this camp and we are a part of this, but what does that mean? So we, like Han said, we do have a lot of people that only are part of Farmers Union for Camp Kenwood. And so them being able to learn what other things we have to offer has helped them in being more a part of Farmers Union after camp ends.
So Camp Kenwood was dedicated in 1951, but it actually is something that started getting worked on in the 1940s. Again, as you both have mentioned, just the whole concept of having an educational mission that you can pass on to the next generation. And I've boated past there. I've driven there. And it's one of those things where people go, wow, how did Farmers Union, how did they get such a prime piece of real estate on Lake Wissota? Well, the answer is you start a very, very long time ago when there wasn't, you know, much up there. And it was, I liked how you described it as remote. For me, it's down the road. But you know, for other people, yeah, it's way, way back there. And it's been quite an experience for generations now because, I mean, you come into that I don't know what the main building is called, if you call it a lodge or what it is, but I mean, it's just breathtaking, the work that went into setting up the place.
Absolutely. And we call it our main lodge. Our main lodge and our cabins were built by our members in the 40s. So bringing that historical component is always something I like to bring up, especially when touring families around the property, because that's not really something you hear a whole lot.
No, and in terms of the diversity there, Hans, I'm really glad that Grace mentioned sheep. I had a friend who was a sheep farmer near Cameron. He eventually moved into alpacas, but you know, raised sheep for many years. And so, when people think of Wisconsin, of course, here come the cows. And we spent a lot of time talking about Cow Appreciation Day in our last hour, but there's a lot more to Wisconsin agriculture than that.
Oh, yeah, it's very diverse. Wisconsin has a very diverse landscape when it comes to agriculture, and we should be very proud of that. My mother-in-law keeps a few sheep, as a matter of fact. We have dairy cows on our farm. We grow all sorts of different crops, but with vegetables and ginseng and so much, there's so much diversity in ag in Wisconsin. It's something really to be proud of, and we're leaders in a lot of the different crops, you know, and cranberries and so forth and so on. So I think it's good that Camp Kenwood is another means by which we can teach people a lot. Like Grace said, a lot of people that aren't farm kids, teach them the diversity of ag and, you know, and give them some ideas on some paths forward for perhaps careers for them as well.
Let me, before I come back to the educational aspect of it, you know, forgive me for being political for just a second here, but when Grace mentioned, you know, that being the Farmers Union being a cooperative and teaching the history of cooperatives, it just leads again to my editorial comment that anybody out there that likes to drop the term socialists and socialism, and if they're not familiar with cooperatives and what a cooperative is, you might want to make sure you're using the vocabulary correctly, because Hans, the whole point of the Wisconsin idea, not to mention Farmers Union, not to mention all the cooperatives across Wisconsin, is the ability to share with one another, and that includes government involvement through the University of Wisconsin system, whereas socialism is, you know, government taking over, you know, the means of production. But Hans, Wisconsin's tradition of cooperatives is what's made us such a leader in agriculture and exports.
I think that there's a lot of truth to that. And I think we should get somebody on who's an expert in co-ops, you know, in and of itself for its own sake, because there is a rich history of cooperatives in Wisconsin and in Wisconsin's ag sector for sure. And it is interesting because when cooperatives just first started getting going, there were folks that feared the competition of co-ops, you know, branding them as socialism and such nonsense. But nothing could be further from the truth. And I think in ag, they've been such a big part of ag because it has given the ability for producers to share in the profits of the processing of their products, and also being able to purchase their inputs with, for less. So it's been very important.
And Grace, from an educational standpoint, talking about cooperation and collaboration, I mean, that sounds to me like just a big part of the whole mission of the Farmers Union is that, you know, nobody does this alone.
Exactly. And even running camp, I'm not doing it alone. I have our entire staff backing me up with all of the information that I need, especially being newer to Farmers Union, having just started in October. There's still a lot that I'm learning, and the ability for them to come together and really see collaboration working, not just saying that, is amazing to see.
So to get away from the educational mission of it for just a moment, if you go to the Wisconsin Farmers Union website, which coincidentally happens to be wisconsinfarmersunion.com, and you go to Camp Kenwood, you also notice that there is a section there on public rentals, and that there are opportunities beyond educational programs for what's described as 23 pristine acres of forested land. I'll bet between the youth camps, the weddings, field trips, I am sure, Grace, you have seen I'm sure you and the other Farmers Union members have seen a fair share of fun and variety of activities out there.
Absolutely. And it's always fun to see what some rentals are doing that's a little bit different than us, and bringing those ideas, again, collaboratively together.
Mm-hmm. Hans, is Camp Kenwood, like, they're kind of a unique situation, right? This isn't where, like, are there other opportunities like this that we're aware of around Wisconsin, or is Camp Kenwood kind of a one of its kind thing?
Boy, I don't know. I think that's a Grace question more than a me question. But
I think all three of us are wondering, because I don't recall hearing anything close to it.
I think this is unique. I mean, there are 4-H summer camps, which I think.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
Those are wonderful as well. But we've been just sort of hooked on Camp Kenwood all these years. And that's why the kids keep coming back. In fact, here comes my daughter, who's going later this week.
All right. Grace, just talk a bit more about the specific activities, because it's broken down into, you know, junior high camp, senior camp, family camp. You know, what's the difference? What are people doing? What are campers doing at all these various stages?
So the activities are typically all the same. It's the educational component that changes with each age group, trying to cater to where their brain development is in that. So our activities, we do have kayaks, canoes, stand-up paddle boards on Lake Wissota. It's kind of a dream. We do a lot of different activities kind of in the field. We try to bring in things that are not artificial when it comes to those. So sometimes our activities are doing like arts and crafts. Doing theater and singing has been a huge part of Camp Kenwood. And so we do a giant activity on Tuesday starting this year, called Tuesday Night Live, where campers are given the opportunity to do their theater performances and do their singing and any other components they want to add. If they like to do arts and crafts, creating a backdrop and being all a part of a show, essentially more for the counselors and some campers that might not want to be incredibly involved. We have a ton of sports equipment. We do a lot of field games. And so a lot of the things we're doing is just trying to keep them outside and feeling comfortable and having fun, even when they're not home or not at school.
If you're told to go outside and play, you'd be hard pressed to find a better place to do that than Camp Kenwood. Grace Clardy, Hans Breitenmoser, always great to talk to you, Hans. Thanks so much for introducing us to Grace. And Grace, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
All right, Hans, get some more rain up there, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks here. When we come back, we're going to talk to Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio to find out what kinds of things have been on his to-do list for conversations during his weekday morning show, one of many that you'll catch here all across the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with Up North News Radio next, where, as always, you're up north.
I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
Kind of feel like we need different walk-up music for Chad Holmes. This is not the time of year where he's everywhere. He actually gets to plant himself for more than 5 minutes at a time now and then. We can find him right now at Bull Falls Radio up in Wausau. Chad, how are you?
Pat, doing good.
All right, good. Do you follow any summer sports on the road, or are you very much a homebody these days?
I am that time of year, those 2 months where it's sort of a homebody. Mm-hmm. But you know, after about a month, I'm ready to start again. But we don't get going again until I think it's the 18th of August. That's not okay. That I'm counting the days.
But. And you know what? Enjoy the time here. We were watching CBS Sunday Morning, and comedian Jim Gaffigan was on there, and he's very much against this whole notion of summer travel. Like, where are you going for the summer? And he's like, why would I go anywhere? There's 2 months a year where it's finally nice around here. I want to stay here. Why do I want to go anyplace else? So yeah, if you like your home, why not do it?
And the thing about it as well is there are always great things going on within a very short distance. Just this past weekend here in Wausau, I had the Balloon Fest. That's a wonderful event.
Oh, nice.
Here in central Wisconsin, had a big barbecue cookout over at the Weston Lanes near where I live as well. So you don't have to travel a long way in order to have a great time during the summer months, especially here in Wisconsin.
That's great. Okay. Well, hey, part of what is keeping you busy there and everybody else at Civic Media is a community blood drive. And I guess I shouldn't call it a blood drive because that assumes that everybody comes to a central location. This is basically a blood donation challenge, and it's called Civic Pints. Give a pint of blood for Civic Media because the state is facing a significant blood shortage. Aaron, I think you have the particulars in front of you. What are we looking for folks to do?
Yeah, it started yesterday. So anytime from July 10th to July 31st, you can go to your closest blood donation center anywhere in the state and just take a selfie of yourself donating blood and submit it at civicmedia.us/giveblood. At civicmedia.us/giveblood. It also has a handy little tool for finding your nearest blood donation center. And once you've done that, it's really easy. All you do is put your name, email address, and your picture of yourself donating blood, and you are entered to win a prize. The prizes include a pair of tickets to a Brewers game, much like we normally give out here, a pair of tickets to the Wisconsin State Fair, or a Civic Media swag pack. Not sure what's all in that. Probably a t-shirt, maybe some stickers, maybe a water bottle, things like that.
I want a t-shirt.
I want one with the Chad Holmes logo on with the hair and the glasses.
No,
I mean, you've got the best logo out of everybody's here.
I will admit that it kind of works. The reason it works is because I had nothing to do with the design of the logo. If I would have anything to do with it, it would have been horrible.
Somebody just saw you and said, hey, this is how I'm going to sketch you.
Yeah.
Imagine you pay somebody at the fair, you know, to do one of those, and that's all they do of you is just some hair and glasses.
After the sketch, they would get me right away. So there you go.
Yeah, it works. So what's been new on the show? Since we spoke last, what have you had for good discussions?
I tell you, yesterday, maybe my favorite interview that since I've been doing the show, it's hard to believe we're getting close to a year here, but
I know
yesterday I had author, Kenneth Farmer. He's from Stevens Point. And he's a former attorney. He was a defense attorney. He was a prosecutor. But he, and he's become an author. He had a couple of novels that have come out in the past. But he wrote a memoir titled Lee. It's about his family and schizophrenia. And Lee was his older brother, and who suffered from schizophrenia. And basically this book, a very powerful book, he had sent it to me late last week. So over the weekend, I was looking at it to get ready for the interview. And it was just a wonderful read, a very tough story. I mean, this family, him and his family, what they went through over many, many years. And he came into studio yesterday. We talked about it. And he was just fantastic. I can't even scratch the surface on everything that we talked about in terms of the book itself, but it was a wonderful write. He explained so much about the issues of dealing with his brother and schizophrenia. His parents had major issues, and he came in and was just a wonderful conversation. I would just, if folks weren't able to tune in on the program yesterday, the second hour, I would hope they would be able to go to civicmedia.us, click on the shows page and on my show and listen to that, or listen wherever you get your podcasts, because it's well worth it. And I would encourage anybody that's had either friends or family or just, you know, wanting to know more about the issue, about the incredible issues that have gone through for a family like this, and you learn so much about it as well. I just was, it was, he was such an impressive person. I was so thrilled he was able to come in, and I hope that maybe a few of the other talk show hosts on our network bring him in to talk about it as well, because it's an important issue, but it's also just a wonderful book.
It sounds extremely similar to when Kristen Lyerly introduced us to Patrick McBride. And his book was called The Luckiest Boy in the World. And he considers himself the luckiest boy in the world. He was like the first ball boy for the Milwaukee Bucks. He worked for the Brewers in the dugout. He worked Packer games. He's then became a brilliant surgeon and medical instructor. But coming from such a broken home because of alcoholism. And it's wonderful that we get these books, and we get these magnificent people sharing stories that come from heartache. It just tears at you that even had to happen to them. And God bless them for overcoming it and being able to inspire others. But my heart still aches for anybody whose childhood is marred that way by either mental disease or addiction or what have you. It's so sad. And I hope these books and these people can help other people through some very tough times.
He talked about, he had, this book was just launched last month, and he had an event. He grew up in Stevens Point, and then he went off to, and actually he was born and in the Ohio, Kentucky area, but as a young boy came to Stevens Point. And for the launch, he was back in Kentucky because he went to law school at Louisville and also started his law career there before coming back to Wisconsin. But he talked about a person that came up to him at the event, basically just saying, "Oh, thank you for writing about this," because this woman, an older woman, said that was my experience as well. And it's a very, like you said, he mentioned yesterday in our discussion about, you know, a lot of the same issues occur within alcoholic families. And to go listen to the show and then get the book as well, because I mean, obviously these days it's not easy to sell books, but this book is well worth it. I was over the weekend saying, "Oh, do I have to read this whole book to get ready for this interview?" Once I started, I was not able to stop, and it was wonderful.
Totally understandable. So you can catch Chad on Bull Falls Radio weekdays from 8 to 10 or at the Civic Media website. Thanks, Chad. Have a great show. Have a great day.
You bet. Thank you too, Pat.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for being with us. You can follow me on Facebook. Just go to Pat Kreitlow Up North. If you are a podcast listener, thank you for every download. If you're listening live, keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Selena Heller tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you up here at the lake tomorrow, where it's always a beautiful day up north.